Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with George Truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What up, guys? I'm excited. We back, homie. We back. I know it's been a couple weeks, and I'm sorry. Hopefully, you were able to catch up if you were behind. Man, went out on a little vacation trip, a little spiritual trip, we'll say. And I had a decent time. It was tough getting back. But we made it anyway. Back in the fray, back at the gym, back, you know, living the life, raising the baby, keeping the wife happy and all that other stuff. But you don't need to hear about all that. You don't care about all that. You want to hear the story. And we're continuing with that story. God bless the girls. Yes. You know what's up. You know what's happening. Miss Sarah Overcast has gotten out of the hospital and gotten home, and she's with her family. Her mom bombed on an anchor that wouldn't let them in their own house and stuff, trying to get all the scoop, all the news trucks and everything on their front lawn and everything. It's been kind of crazy for them. But, you know, once they got into the house, it's, you know, back to normal and everything, or at least trying to be. And the person that they can't keep away from her is Mark, her friend, the one that's been there the whole time. And basically in these last couple of chapters, he's been telling her more of the backstory on the family that took her. And it seems like Gore is a junior. He's a Jerry. His father's name is Jerry as well. And then Teresa is the mom. And he's telling them the backstory of how she was taken, and how it all started, how Teresa, the mother, is a bipolar patient, and how her fascination started out of love, believe it or not. She desperately wanted a daughter after having Gore and couldn't have one, and you know, her fascination for little girls turned into a sick thing where she, you know, did what she does to little girls and women now. And he even tells a story of how she was caught, you know, what at a block party in their neighborhood, and she was caught with a little girl in the backyard, and that's when Jerry, you know, saw the issues that she had. So basically in the chapters today, we'll just do 34, 35, and 36. We'll just continue on those stories, and now we'll get more into the details of what exactly happened to Sarah that night too. So I'm not even going to hold you long, man. We'll just get into it. Chapters 33 or 34, 35, 36 of God Bless the Girls. You know, as always, everything that's recorded on Dialogue Heavy has been written and recited by me, Michael Anthony McMillan. So without further ado, I bring to you God Bless the Girls. Here we go. Ironically enough, the genesis of this whole situation started with a textbook. Crazy. I know. The night at a party, Gore was only going to Josh's place to pick up his philosophy book from Sam. Sam told him that his little brother was having some lame high school party in the basement, and if he wanted, there was some free booze and a couple of hot seniors that were probably going to be attending their university in the fall. Now, of course, at first Gore refused. He never drank an alcoholic beverage in his life, not to mention he couldn't talk to girls on his own accord if he paid them. But right as Gore was heading out the front door, he said he saw me in the kitchen with Josh, and something came over him. He told the detectives that he knew he had to have me. He said he never felt an urge quite like that in his life. And next thing he knew, his predatorial instincts kicked in and he couldn't control himself. So he changed his mind and told Sam he would ask if he could stay. But what he was really going off to do was to plan the capture of the first girl that he planned to rape. When Gore returned to his family's van, Teresa and Jerry Sr. were eager to go home. They were their usual forceful, aggressive selves, and he knew in order to persuade them to take a new victim so close to their house, he'd have to entice him with something special. So he told them that if they agreed to take me as their next victim, he would finally include himself in their sick antics. But to his surprise, that didn't wet their beaks like he thought it would. But then he remembered a part of the conversation that I had had with Josh that would make them go batshit over me. Apparently, he overheard me when I told Josh that I wanted him to take my virginity that night. Chapter 35. Jerry the First was still adamant about not breaking the family code, but as usual, Teresa was the deciding factor, and it wasn't long before Gore was back inside the house with that jar of dark liquid I spoke about earlier. The drink was a special concoction rich in gamma hydroxybutyrate, or GHB, the leading ingredient in what people know as the date rape jug, or nowadays commonly known as liquid ecstasy. GHB attacks the central nervous system and causes its victims to have decreased inhibitions, disorientation, loss of coordination and consciousness, and in my case, as in many others, severe memory loss. When Gore returned to the party, Sam looked at him strange and asked him where he'd gotten what Gore said was homemade moonshine, but Gore told him he always had stuff stashed away for situations like this. Of course, he'd never been to a high school party or a college party before, but Sam didn't know that. Gore stood at the top of the stairs and watched as Sam introduced me to the highly dangerous and highly addictive substance, and as soon as I took the first drink, he knew he had me, and he left back to his car with his parents and just waited. As far as the argument that I'd later eavesdrop on between the two teammates, it had nothing to do with me at all. Gore had just told Sam that he wouldn't be at their next wrestling match, and Sam overreacted. The boys' wrestling team was facing their biggest rivals in Oklahoma State University, and with Gore being the best wrestler on the team, Sam was pissed that he wouldn't be there, and he let him know it. But next thing Sam knew, he was staring up at a starlit night. Now, after Mark and I left Josh's place, Gore and his family followed us to the Greasy Spoon Diner, and the rest was history. They hadn't planned on a big, strong companion like Mark to be my ride, but that was Gore's speciality anyway. And as luck would have it, their only threat would be removed by none other than the prey herself. God damn. While I caused a diversion leading to my own destruction, Teresa walked through the front door, took the passageway to the ladies' room, then opened the emergency door exit for the two Jerrys who had driven the van around back. Unlike Susie, Terry, and Boston, though, I didn't have to be gagged or bound or silenced. Me taking two shots of the GHB would be everything needed to put me out. As Teresa pretended to be using the bathroom in the furthest stall from the door, I came through stumbling over myself. Supposedly, I had peed. Supposedly, I had peed fine. It was only when I splashed water on my face at the sink that I fell onto the floor like a sack of potatoes. That's when the Jerrys were called in to pick up my seemingly lifeless body, then they took me to their home to meet my brand new roommates. Chapter 36. While poor Mark and his father were being abused in public and social media, Lynn, his mother, was to be publicly acknowledged for her accomplishments as the Realtor of the Year at the Ranch County's annual Realtors Conference. Obviously, because of the recent goings-on, Mark and his father were reluctant to go, but Lynn made it very clear that that argument was not of negotiation. Once at the Realtors Conference, Mark did what teenagers do at their parents' functions. He put up a fake smile and shake hands with pompous people his mother introduced him to that he'd hoped to never see again. Then, when the time was right, he went off to a secluded area and sat watching whatever on his phone until it was time to leave. The only people Mark did remember meeting that night was Jerry the First and Teresa. And that was mainly due to the argument Mark witnessed from his truck when Gore slammed Sam into the floor outside the party a couple weeks prior. Mark thought of the couple as creepy, to say the least, and he told me that the way Teresa looked at his mother struck him as odd. He said, "She looked at my mom like a lion looks at a gazelle." He didn't find her particularly threatening, but Later on, when he saw her look at one of the waitresses serving cheese and wine the same way, he knew she had some kind of screw loose. Later that night, Mark was going to take a much-needed smoke break outside behind the building, but before he lit up, he went out into some bushes to pee. While there, he heard someone come out the same door as he had. When he looked up, he saw Jerry on the phone. Jerry looked around before continuing in a panicked tone. "Where did you go, Teresa?"
"What? No. No, yes. I do actually have the audacity to tell you no."
"Why? Are you serious?"
"No, we are not taking anybody home tonight. I've already told you, honey, we can't."
"Because I work with these people. Not to mention that little girl Jerry just had to have has the whole town on alert."
Mark's eyes widened. He jumped involuntarily, hitting his head on a low-hanging branch, and to make things worse, he was pissing on his own shoes. He slipped in the gravel, and when he looked up while fixing himself, Jerry was looking right at him, or at least what he thought was Mark. Mark held his breath as Jerry charged towards the bushes he was behind, and although Mark was pretty confident in his ability to take on a man Jerry's age and stature, it did cross his mind that the older man could do to him what his son had done to Sam. Lucky for Mark, though, he would never have to find out. Mark's saving grace would come in the form of a catering truck that pulled up to the loading dock, and Jerry hurried back into the party before being seen. Now, Mark isn't stupid. He knew what the smart option should be. Go tell the cops, or at least his dad, what he had heard and let them do what they get paid to do. But he didn't think anyone would take him seriously. Hell, at that moment, his family were people of interest in my disappearance in the first place. And imagine if he was wrong, or if he thought he heard something that he didn't. Shit, his dad can kiss law enforcement goodbye. And Lynn would probably never sell a house in the state of Texas again. Plus, there was no time to explain. He made the choice right then and there. He was about to go about this and find me on his own. All right, guys, that's it for today. I know it's a short episode, but that is chapter 34, 35, and 36 of God Bless the Girls. I'm just happy to be back, in all honesty. And the story is getting even more and more interesting. I know the chapters were a little short today, so you didn't get a ton, but we wanted to just come back. I didn't want to go another week without giving you guys what you wanted to hear. And I've been getting the messages, and I understand that you want to find out what goes on, and let's get to the end of this thing. So I just appreciate you and thank you for listening, man. So that's it for now. But we're going to try to do some more next week and make sure we stay consistent as possible. And I thank you for listening, man. So I'll talk to you later. You know how you can get a hold of me on my Instagram at Michael DeGrio. And my email is mzzmzackack199@gmail.com. That's mzzack199@gmail.com. So I'll talk to you later. I'll see you guys. And don't forget, message, share, comment, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you soon. I'll see you later. Peace. I'm out of here.
Yo, 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 yo. Hey, 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 hey. We are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with George Truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What up? Guys, we got another one. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And I appreciate you as always, as usual. Let's get into it. So last week on God Bless the Girls, as you know, Mark, our main character, Sarah's best friend, has been telling her all the situations that came to from his side of things. And he talked about how the situation, he started off with the history of the family. Now he's telling her how he got to Sarah. So there was a real estate convention in honor of his mother,
and he had to go. His mom said, no, you're going. You and your dad are going. So he reluctantly goes to this convention. And while there, amongst meeting all the other realtor and snobby people that he thought was snobby anyway, he sees Teresa and Jerry Sr., the parents of Gore. And he remembers them from the party and the body slam and all that. Remember, he was in his truck. So he saw everything that Sarah saw just from his point of view. And so he remembered them. And then he remembered their demeanor and how they seemed sketchy and weird. And particularly how Teresa looks at women. His mother, Mark's mother, Lynn, he said that she was looking at her like a lion looks at a gazelle. And then also the same with some of the waitress staff at the convention. So he kept his eye on that, but he went and did what he had to do. He later on went outside for a smoke break and went to go take a piss, go to relieve himself. And he overhears a conversation that Jerry is having with Teresa on the phone after Jerry couldn't find her inside at a party. Jerry is freaking out because Teresa wants to take yet another victim home. And Jerry is telling her no. Reason being, the city is already on high alert from Sarah's capture, and they can't be under further scrutiny. Obviously, Teresa doesn't agree with that, but more importantly, Mark overhears all of this and flips the fuck out. He almost gets caught by Jerry because he slips in his own urine and stuff, but luckily for him, a catering truck comes. The catering truck comes and pulls up to the port of the building, and Jerry goes in and escapes. And that's basically where we're going to start off at. Mark decides to go and look for Sarah on his own rather than alert his dad. So that's where we're going to start. Chapters 37, 38, and 39 today on God Bless the Girls. Here we go. As you know, at this point, everything that's written and read on this podcast, sorry, I'm flubbering over myself. I'm already looking at the words on the page. Dialogue Heavy is all recited and written by yours truly, Michael Anthony Millen. So without further ado, I bring to you another couple of chapters of God Bless the Girls. Let's go. Chapter 37. Earlier that day, Mark promised his mother that he would only go to the real estate thing on one condition. That condition would be that he could take his own car so he can go to the gym afterwards. Since I was gone and the town had turned on him, Mark felt like working out his heart to near explosion every night was the only way that he could sleep. His mother agreed. Okay, when Mark went back into the party, he looked around for Jerry and Teresa and couldn't find them. He busted out the front door and looked in the parking lot, not knowing exactly what he was looking for, until he saw the van from the night of the party. He ran to his car and sped out of the lot, almost crashing into another car that held a family of five. Mark used the knowledge that his father briefed him about when he was younger to tell the van, and he kept his distance. But once they left the city street and got into the open rural areas, he had to turn his lights off in the black of night, or else Jerry Sr. and Teresa would surely notice. The only thing that guided Mark was the taillights of the van that was becoming further and further away until ultimately he was in the dark. Mark rolled his window down and listened for any clues of which direction the truck had gone, and got nothing but squawking sounds and mating calls from the nocturnal animals that were surely watching him, and he gripped tighter onto his father's shotgun that he had on the passenger side seat. Now, his father would kill him if he knew he had it, but Mark had so much anxiety ever since he started receiving threats on his life that caring was the only thing that made him feel safe in public. Besides, he had only ever planned to use it for intimidation anyways. Way off in the distance, Mark saw the bright brake lights light up in the gargantuan trees that surrounded Jerry and Teresa's home, and decided to stop where he was and walk the rest of the way. He waited and waited, and finally, after the last light in the house went out for the night, Mark made his approach. In fear of being seen, he didn't use the light of his phone to light the path, and the moon did little to help. It did, though, make him aware of the night creatures whose eyes glinted and stalked Mark as he passed. The snapping of twigs and coos scared the living daylights out of him, but he tried to keep his cool and continue with his pursuit. The cold was beginning to mess with his senses, and amongst other things, he'd wish he'd taken that shrimp puff offer given by the cute waitress earlier at the realtor's ball. But his stomach would have to wait, though, because the next thing he knew, when he was about 200 or so yards away from the house, when he heard the faintest echo of a screen door swing open and bang against the side of the house, and when he looked up, a tall, lanky white girl, barefooted and barely clothed, jumped the stairs of the patio and ran into the dark forest. Chapter 38. Sarah! He yelled. And by the sheer speed of the pale white figure running through the trees and galloping over logs, he said he knew it had to be me. When he saw the big dark hulking figure that was running, stop and look in his direction When he saw the big dark hulking figure that was running, stop and look in his direction with no ifs, ands, or buts, Mark aimed his father's gun at Gore and squeezed the trigger, but nothing happened. What the fuck? Mark yelled in a panic as he watched Gore continue to try to chase me down. In his panic and self-stated dumb nature, he realized seconds later that he had never cocked the gun. Shit! He said as he cocked the shotgun back and forward, but when he went to aim at the shadowed man, he was gone. Fuck, he said, and ran back to his truck. But by this time, the beginning of the light of the next day would help him just enough to see as he arrived to it. Dad, Mark yelled into his phone as he tried to reverse down the narrow gravel road. I think I found Sarah. Mark, where are you? I thought you were in the house. Dad! Yes, son, I heard you. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. I think. What's going on? Mark faintly heard his mother say in the background. Mark is out of the house, and he says, Dad! Mark said. Mark pulled out onto the open road and punched his gas pedal, heading toward the direction he saw me go last. I hear you, Mark. I think you should just come home and wait. Mark hung up the phone and sent his father his location pin, then threw his phone onto the passenger seat. He passed over the train tracks, and right as he looked over to his right, he saw two figures way off yonder and pumped his brakes. His phone rang, but Mark ignored it. Ahead of him, about 3 or 4 miles, was the next turn. He'd have to try to make a big square detour, and in that time, I could have been caught. Fuck this, Mark said. He hit reverse, pulled back on a few feet, then he shifted into overdrive and drove his truck onto the tracks. Mark's truck was getting tore up by the train tracks, but he was focused on the two bodies in front of him. The truck jumped up and down, and Mark knew if he didn't concentrate on staying flush as possible to the tracks, the whole truck would roll over. He wasn't going as fast as he wanted, and when he looked up and saw me take that right turn going back towards the house, he panicked. No! Mark yelled. He pressed the accelerator, and soon enough, his car started to smoke. It sounded like the engine had fell out the bottom. It was so loud, and when Mark tried to pull off the tracks, the front passenger tire gave out and the whole truck toppled over upside down. Fuck, Mark yelled. Fuck, Mark yelled, and he closed his eyes, embracing the impact. And when he opened his eyes moments later, he and his truck were upside down, and the barrel of his dad's shotgun was pressed squarely against his forehead. Chapter 39. Mark lay between his cracked windshield and his dashboard. He kicked his way through the driver's side window, grabbed his weapon, and ran the rest of the train track. When he made it to the right, to the turn that he saw me do, it was nothing but a windy road and forest. He wasn't sure if I was caught and dragged back into the forest or if I was still on the road. He looked around for clues, and about 100 yards into his run, right before the first wind in the road, he saw sweat droplet puddles every few feet. Mark lifted a lot of weights, but he always left the running to me. So by this time, his legs were cramping. On top of that, the last thing he drank was champagne that he snuck to drink at the realtor party. But when he heard me yell, he sprinted to get me. When he turned that last corner, he saw me at Jerry's truck about 100 yards away, fighting with all my might to get away from them. He was about 50 yards behind Gore, who was running at me as well. "Sarah!" Mark yelled. But in my state of panic, and maybe also the drugs kicking in, I thought Gore was yelling for me, and that's all I saw when I looked down the road. Mark said Gore stopped and stared at him, then sprinted to try to get to me first. When I pulled away from Jerry and ran into the forest, Gore was going after me, and that's when Mark stopped, aimed, and shot right into the truck, and shot right into the cab of the truck. He said all he saw was that after that was blood spatter. "No!" Gore yelled at the top of his lungs once he'd reached the truck. And once Mark got there, Gore gave him a look of death that even with a gun, Mark said later, crept into his bones. "Don't you fucking move," Mark said as he pointed the shotgun at Gore's face. Gore, with tears still rolling down his face, obeyed the order but looked like he was ready to do to Mark what he'd been doing to his parents' past victims. Mark kept his gun on Gore as he paced slowly backwards through the forest in the direction he saw me go. He kept his gun pointed in the general region in the truck until he couldn't see the truck anymore. Then he booked it in search for me. Mark yelled and yelled for me and couldn't get any clues to or hear me yell back. And finally, he found me at the lake. In the position that he saw my body in, he thought that I could have been dead. But when he rolled me over, I was barely breathing and unresponsive. Mark's father had to call in a favor from his old mentor and field training supervisor, Buck, just to get the department to believe his story and go out on the chase for me and my captors. But eventually, he and the Galveston Sheriff's Department arrived at Mark's truck, where his phone lay as a tracking device. Then while they patrolled the area, they found Jerry's truck and pulled up right as Mark was walking out the forest carrying what looked like my lifeless body. The sheriffs forced Mark to drop me and the shotgun and lay on the ground. I guess they were just following procedure and they didn't know what they were walking into out there, but if you ask me, they were still just being dicks. The department took Mark downtown and questioned him like he was a suspect for a while, but they eventually let him go. He went straight from the department to the hospital I was at. He was there night and day. There wasn't a single time that I woke up and he wasn't in his chair over by the window. Eventually, after fighting with Mark tooth and nail, the hospital staff realized the term visiting hours didn't apply to him. And when I finally arrived home, my parents realized that too. And boom! That's it, guys. 37, 38, 39 of God Bless the Girls. Man, that's Mark's side now. So I hope you liked it. I hope you listened and you liked it and stuff. This is a crazy story, and we're getting there, man. We're getting there. We're not too far from the end now. And I'm glad that you hung on the ride for me. So Mark did his thing, man. That dude loved this girl through and through. Out of all the shit that she put him through and not wanting to be in a relationship with him, he fought and he stayed there. And luckily he was there, man, because if it wasn't for Mark, who knows if Sarah ever would have been found? Who knows if she would have, you know, not made it? Or if she would have unfortunately been just like any one of the other victims. So now you're hearing Mark's side and crazy twists and turns with Gore and Jerry and Teresa as well. So I got a nice little tidbit today from the people that I record this podcast with. And on the analytics, man, it looks like we got over 2,000 listeners on here now. I can't even fucking believe it. So congratulations to you guys, and I appreciate you guys. I guess I wrote it, so I guess there's a little appreciation and congratulations to me as well. But I'm just glad you're here, man. So if you want to help expand the podcast, you can, you know, do what you got to do. You can share, comment, and all that other stuff. Anything is appreciated. We started to create a community here that's listening to this stuff, and I can't thank you more enough than what I can say on here. But I'll continue to try to make these stories great and make you guys proud and make it listenable. I don't even know if that's a word. But so I thank you, man. I really, really, really do thank you. And my heart just swells just thinking that many people are listening to these stories. And I just wanted to get it out. You know, I started this podcast just trying to get my stories out. And I didn't want them to go without being heard. My very first podcast says that, you know, I have these stories in my head and I write them and stuff. And, you know, not everybody has the opportunities and the platforms and stuff like that. But I'm glad a place like Anchor has given me the opportunity to put my stuff out there. And just your choice to listen to it. And with all the choices around the world, all the humongous podcasts and all that other stuff, I'm glad that you're listening to this. And I hope that, you know, we get more people listening to it and stuff. So I thank you and I appreciate you again from the bottom of my heart. I can't thank you anymore. And I will catch you next week. God bless the girls. Let's go.